This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Robert Hur testified today. We'll talk about that briefly tonight. We'll discuss language, why they're purposeful about it. Carol Roth is here to talk inflation. Are we going to ban TikTok? Should we ban TikTok? All that's coming up tonight on I'm Right. All right, let's deal with the Robert Hur stuff from today right off the bat. We'll talk to Congressman Eli Crane in more detail about this in a little bit, probably like 10 minutes from now. But Robert Hur today, special counsel who looked into Joe Biden and classified documents stuff, testified before Congress today. I'm sure you've heard and seen a million clips of it. And look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it wasn't important. Sunshine, sunlight is the best disinfectant. It does matter that the American people understand just how dishonest and corrupt the Biden family is. It does matter. That is important. These hearings and things like that, they are important to a point, all right? But the reason we're not going to lead the show, the whole bunch of clips of Robert Hur's testimony and all these things are nothing's going to come of this. Nothing's going to come of it. Robert Hur was a special counsel, and he already announced, yes, Joe Biden's the president. Yes, he committed a bunch of crimes. He backed all that up today. But yes, he's too senile, too far gone mentally to stand trial. Therefore, there's not going to be any charges brought against Joe Biden. Democrats did what they always do today. They locked shields, defended their man, embarrassed themselves, but locked shields and defended their man. Republicans made sure everyone knew just how much of a dishonest, dirty liar Joe Biden is, and that's that. That's all there's going to be, all right? So let's talk about some other things, and we'll get back to that with Eli Crane here in just a few. We always honor the fallen on this show. We just lost a couple National Guard soldiers and a Border Patrol agent. Helicopter crash in Texas patrolling the border. Just want to honor them. Honor their families, honor that kind of sacrifice. It's dangerous work protecting a country, and the people who do it, military, border patrol, these types, always receive our respect on this show. And sometimes, look, these are dangerous jobs that can take your life. Sometimes the job can cost you your life. Your family has to get that phone call. Dad's never coming home again. So keep that family in your prayers. Now, speaking of the border, let's talk a little bit about communists, language, why they use language the way they use it. Of course, everyone knows the Lake and Riley story by now. Wonderful young woman in Georgia murdered by an illegal. And of course, everyone remembers Joe Biden's crappy State of the Union last Thursday, where he went off the cuff and accidentally called the illegal an illegal.
Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal.
Okay. What did he say that was wrong there? Well, nothing. Obviously, he was honest. He was honest. So why was it such a big deal to the communists that Joe Biden had used that word, illegal? Grandma Vodka ran to the news that night and said, well, you shouldn't have used that word.
Now, you should have said undocumented, but that's not a big thing, okay? What's the big thing about
that? I actually wasn't even going to ask about that. I was just going to ask more about the moment, but you do think that he should have said undocumented? That wasn't going to be my question.
Well, we usually say undocumented.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And she was by far, she was far from the only one who was outraged at Joe Biden being honest and calling an illegal illegal. In fact, the communists immediately pounced on him for such a simple, honest statement.
Biden used the word, quote, illegal.
He used the term illegal.
He used the word illegal.
He used the word illegal.
He used the word illegals to describe people.
He did use a word that did bother people. Immigration advocates don't want to hear him use the word illegal.
You may be wondering, why does this matter, right? It's just a word. Who cares? Well, because language matters. The words we use to describe each other matters.
And there it was at the end. In fact, Joe Biden caught so much heat for being honest one time. He gave a 68-minute speech in the State of the Union. He was honest one time. He caught so much heat for that honesty, he ran to do a cushy sit-down media interview where he apologized 2 days later.
You used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Laken Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing. We have to control the border and more orderly flow, but I don't share his view at all.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
Now, let's have a discussion. It's actually not about illegal immigration, although that's what we're talking about specifically here, but let's again have a discussion about what communists do and why communists do what they do and how we have failed at that on the right. For instance, let's just stay on topic here. You've heard me rant and rave how many times here on the first about the right using the word migrant to discuss illegals, because you see this all over the place now. The right has simply adopted that word, migrants, migrants, migrants. There are migrants. How many migrants? How many? Not from just left-wing things, from right-wing, sometimes hardcore right-wing sources will now use the word migrant. Maybe you found yourself using that word migrant. After all, they're migrants. And I've screamed about this over and over and over again. Why? Well, here's the thing about communism. Just stay with me for a couple minutes here. Communism is not only terrible, communism understands, the people who push it understand that it's ugly, that the people are not really going to enjoy it. Communists understand that. They understand their sick demonic religion is a difficult sell because, after all, it's a sick demonic religion that demands the destruction of everything. Kind of hard to sell that, right? Hey, sign up for my sick demonic religion. I promise to destroy everything you care about. Not exactly an easy sell, right? So communism thrives, has always thrived, and will always thrive on two things: hurting people and lying. Hurting people and lying. You must hurt, oftentimes kill, the people who are trying to stop you from doing what you're doing. Communists have no problem with that at all. But two, deception. Language is so important to the communists. You heard that woman say it at the end of that clip there. Language, 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 language. Why do they speak like that? Why are they always talking about language? Language is important to the communist because deception is everything to the communist. Therefore, he can't have an honest moment during the State of the Union address and just use the word illegal for an illegal. That one honest moment for the communist was a mortal sin, a deadly sin, because, as the communist said in that clip, language matters. They must deceive at all times. And if anybody, Joe Biden included, strays from the dogma of deception and is honest even one time, that for them is the deadly sin. And so many people on the right today, they're screaming about Joe Biden. He's apologizing to the illegal. And oh my gosh, he's more worried about the illegal. No, it's not that he's more worried about the illegal. For the communists, strict adherence to the chosen language is more important than a young woman's life in Georgia. And I know that's insane and it's sick. And I know it is. It's insane. It's sick. These people are insane and sick. But that is how they think. It's not about the young woman who died. It's not about the illegal. Joe Biden was given a list by the hive mind of approved language, approved words, language that was chosen specifically because it's the right kind of deceptive. That's why abortion is reproductive rights and things like that. They choose their words carefully because all their words are intended to deceive. That's why you don't generally go around having to be super careful choosing your words. Hey, let me do it to you this way. I'll explain it to you this way. It's the best way I can explain it. Your wife makes a terrible meal, blows it one night, uses the wrong kind of seasoning, burns it or something like that, and she's had a bad day. And you don't want to make her day any worse. So when she asks you, honey, how was dinner? I want you to be honest with me. You're in a moment there where you understand that some amount of deception is necessary. Therefore, you're going to choose your words carefully, aren't you? Oh, honey, it was, man, you really did something different tonight. And I'll tell you, I could taste the garlic in there. Man, it was, you'll be choosing your words carefully because you have to lie. But if she makes you the best meal you've ever had in your life, fettuccine Alfredo, my wife makes the best fettuccine Alfredo in the world. If there's a plate of that waiting for me when I get home and I sit down to eat it, I don't have to sit and choose my words carefully. I don't have to, I'll just say, oh my gosh, that's the best thing ever. Thanks, woman. You see, you have to choose your words carefully when you lie. When you're honest, you do not. And back to what we were talking about, just to wrap up this point here, we have so much we need to get to. We're gonna talk to Eli Crane next, so much else. That's why you can never use their words. And honestly, it's an excellent rule and an easy rule to follow. Whatever words they choose can never be used by you or me. And I'm sure I fail at this sometimes too. I'm a human being too. Because their words have been chosen with the intention to deceive. Therefore, you can never, ever, 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 under any circumstances, adopt the language of the communist. In fact, you must find the language the communist hates, and that has to be the language you use. So if they get that angry about you using the word illegal, use the word illegal. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Eli Crane, we'll get to him in a moment now. Speaking of deception, let's talk about your timeshare. I bet you didn't know when you signed up that you'd never be allowed out, did you? No one does, because these companies don't tell you. They bury it on page 26 of the contract you sign in wee little teeny tiny print. You use your timeshare for a while, and then eventually you're done with it, and you try to get out, and that's when the other shoe drops, and you find out you're stuck for life. At least that's what they tell you. You're not stuck for life. Just make a phone call. Lone Star Transfer. Lone Star Transfer will legally and permanently set you free. They guarantee it. They put it in writing. This business has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Call Lone Star Transfer and let them set you free. 844-310-2646. All right? We'll be back.
February 8th, the White House. Question, Mr. President, why did you share classified information with your ghostwriter? The President, I did not share classified information. I did not share it. I guarantee I did not. That's not true, is it, Mr. Herr?
That is inconsistent with the findings based on the evidence in my report.
Yeah, so it's a lie, is just what regular people would say, right? Yeah.
What did that ghostwriter do with the information Joe Biden shared with him on his laptop? What did he do after you were named special counsel?
He slid, if I remember correctly, he slid those files into his recycle bin on his computer.
Tried to destroy the evidence, didn't he?
Correct.
Did the White House try to weigh in with your investigation on elements of that report and, frankly, get the report changed?
They did request certain edits and changes to the draft report.
At any point in your investigation, did you have any reason to believe that President Biden lied to you?
I do address in my report one response the president gave to a question that we had posed to him that we deemed to be not credible.
So this lengthy, expensive, and independent investigation resulted in a complete exoneration of President Joe Biden. You exonerated
a conviction.
I know that the term willful retention has a... Mr. Hertz, my time. Thank you.
I love that one. I kind of love her. You exonerated him. Don't interrupt me. I wonder what Eli thinks when he sits there during all this with all these dirty commie scumbags. Joining me now, my friend, Congressman Eli Crane, Navy SEAL out of Arizona. All right, Congressman, what's it like sitting there with all these dirty lying pieces of trash every day? Is it that hard?
You know, it's pretty wild, Jesse. You know, I think about what the folks back home must be thinking while they're watching this nonsense and you know, it just, you know, it's indicative of the frustrations that they feel when they watch what goes on in this place. I mean, like the clip you saw with Congressman Gates, you know, we've got, he's like, oh, so it was a lie. That's what the American people would call it. And it's like, you almost have to speak a completely different language to come up here and function. But yeah, that's what goes on all day, every day up here is lie, 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 lie. And you know, it's what we heard during the State of the Union just last week is more lies from this president.
Eli, what do we get out of today? I'm not saying there's no benefit in exposing these people and things like that, but does what happened today, Robert Hur testifies, does it move the ball forward in any possible way, or are we now where we were when we woke up this morning?
Well, I think, you know, that's yet to be known, Jesse. I think that we'll find out in the coming months. Hopefully the American people will continue to see just how, you know, the history of dishonesty with this individual, the commander in chief, the president of the United States, and hopefully, you know, they'll vote him out and vote resoundingly for, you know, former President Donald J. Trump, which I think is honestly the biggest chance that we have at turning this this massive bureaucratic, you know, ship, you know, back in the right direction.
Before we move on and talk about Mayorkas and his impeachment and everything else, I want to give you the floor to talk about some Army private getting railroaded pretty bad. What's going on?
Yeah, so you know, there are a couple state senators, Senators Borelli and State Senator Wendy Rogers, that alerted me to a situation with an Arizona constituent named Private Marinon, who just went through training in the Army. He was a, you know, 30, you know, plus year old Peruvian young man that came here, wasn't even a citizen yet, wanted to get his citizenship and also serve his country. You know, very smart individual. Loved the United States of America, very conservative individual. And unfortunately, the private had a worldview that did not align with the ever increasing woke and DEI infested, you know, ideology of the armed services and the Army. And, you know, when he was confronted with many of these issues, including in one occasion where, you know, he had his cell phone out, or another individual saw that he had a President Trump screensaver and asked why he was a racist. You know, he fired back and said, I'm not a racist. And these are the types of things that he experienced. But, you know, even some of the things that he was charged with doing, Jesse, and saying, if you know, you and I saw all of it while we were in the service, and most of the things that the private was accused of, if were even true, you know, would have been handled, you know, by some type of, you know, either physical punishment, like get your rucksack, you're going to go on a run, or you're going to, you know, you're going to clean the latrines or the toilets. But the reason that I wanted to talk about this story is I think it's really indicative of what the military is becoming, Jesse. This isn't just General Kelly, you know, testifying before Congress saying, I want to get familiar with my white rage. You know, and, you know, all the, you know, drag shows and everything else that we see going on in the military, it has real consequences, you know, for the men and women, you know, at the bottom levels of our military that just want to serve their country. And it's very concerning for many reasons. One, because, you know, many of these individuals aren't being treated fairly. But more importantly than any of it, Jesse, is that we have some very real adversaries out there around the world who would love to topple and take out the United States of America, you know, economically, with their military. And, you know, when I look at what we're focused on, we're not really that focused on readiness. We're not focused on lethality. We continue to be focused on, you know, this social experimentation and diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think it's going to end up in a very dangerous situation for many of our service members. And I think the United States of America is going to get humbled because we're focused on all the wrong things.
Gosh, I'm so worried. You're right. This is what keeps me up at night when I think about this stuff, Eli. I think about waking up one day to a carrier group in the bottom of the Pacific or something. I mean, something god awful like that. And I know that day is coming, and I know it's going to just rip my guts out. And like, I can see it coming, and I can't stop it. It drives me insane.
You and me both, brother. But you know, this is why, you know, I ran into people who said, "Hey, is this worth your time? You know, this private, and this private is absolutely worth my time. Every individual in our armed forces, you know, deserves to be treated fairly and deserves the opportunity to serve their country." And make no mistake about it, Jesse, I don't think that this young man was perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but to get treated, and he's getting booted out of the military. You know, and it's interesting, Jesse, because when I was down there, I talked to many of his peers. I talked to four of his peers. I interviewed them, who all said that, you know, the charges against him were not reflective of this young man's character. And so even many of his peers, you know, are in complete, opposition to what the, you know, character charges against this young man are. And it's just, it's awful, man. But we're going to continue to fight, you know, even these individual cases. But it's also a part of it is exposing to the American people that watch your show what the military is becoming, because I know that there's fathers, mothers, and grandparents who watch your show who are advising young men and women on whether or not they should enter into the military. And I think it's something that each and every one of them, and I'm not saying they should tell their kids not to join the military, but I'm telling you, and I know that they'll listen, hey, you should be very careful about having your kids join the military right now.
Eli, you are the man, brother. I appreciate it. Thanks for being on it. All right. 4 years ago, we had lockdowns. Let's talk about them with Jeffrey Tucker next. Before we do that, what else came with lockdowns? Printing money by the trillion. You saw the inflation news today. Do you think there's a reason nation states are buying up gold? The finance giants are buying up gold. Gold, all-time high right now. Do you think there's a reason? Of course there's a reason. The volatility right now of the finance industry is insane. Every human being should be acquiring precious metals. You don't have to go crazy. Let Oxford Gold Group get some gold or silver in your hands. Let them get it in your retirement account. You see what's happening out there. You see what's happening with the dollar. Every month there's a new inflation headline that makes your eyeballs pop out of your skull. So start planning. Doesn't do us any good to sit around sucking our thumb. Plan. Oxford Gold Group is your plan. They will make it easy for you. I send my friends there, my family there. Call them. 833-995-GOLD. Tell them I told you to call and they'll take care of you. Okay? We'll be back. You know, I struggle with something. I'm uncertain on my position on something. TikTok. And allow me to explain. TikTok is a terrible app. I don't have it. It's Chinese spyware. It's awful. It's manipulating the country. It's terrible. It's all those things. I get that. But I've honestly considered starting a TikTok account. Why? Because that's where young people are. But then I say to myself, no, it's dirty commie Chinese spyware. I can't do that. So I've never done it. But I thought about it. I'm mixed. And I'm also mixed about whether or not it should be banned. I know it's bad. I know it's bad for the country. I have some concerns about the government passing any laws at all because this government's evil too. Let's ask Jeffrey about it. Joining me now, Jeffrey A. Tucker, founder and president of the Brownstone Institute, also author of the new book, Life After Lockdown. Okay, Jeffrey, straighten me out. How should I feel about TikTok?
My views are just like yours. I once downloaded the app because I wanted to see what everybody was talking about, and I felt myself getting stupid. After just 5 minutes, I couldn't bear it. I mean, it was weirdly engaging and utterly pointless. I don't know how else to explain it, and so I shut it off and then deleted it from my phone. That was it. So yeah, I'm tempted by the idea of that this would be a better country and a better culture without TikTok, right? But you know what troubles me so much is about this whole thing, which has really hit us this week. We've got this bill to force divestiture of TikTok and make it, you know, not owned by the CCP, which I'm supportive of that. But also the bill, Thomas Massie, who's looked at the bill very carefully, says that it would actually grant government vast powers over all websites, not just apps, and not just foreign-owned apps, but allows them to claim that anything is foreign-owned, and then ban it. And, you know, in light of the whole Russiagate thing, you know, where the claim was that the Trump administration only got elected thanks to the intervention by Putin in 2016, it's all preposterous. But I'm a little concerned about claims of foreign ownership if they're too broad and you give government too much liberality. But there's something else that's really bothered me about this. On Monday, the Supreme Court is hearing arguments in the case of Murthy versus Missouri, which is the a specific case on the injunction issued by the Fifth Circuit on Missouri Biden, which concerns the ability of the government to censor social media directly or through third parties. Now, this is an extremely important case because we've learned over the last several years that this wasn't, you know, the bans and the throttling and the fact that LinkedIn took down this post of yours or that your Facebook group was dropped suddenly. This is not, you know, a small problem. It's a huge industry. It's a $1 trillion industry. It involves 80 universities, hundreds of government agencies, and all sorts of nonprofit organizations and NGOs. And it's not just national, it's global. So you have this gradual attempt to turn all social media into an arm of the intelligence agencies, complete with surveillance and censorship of the most extreme sort. Worse than anything we saw, you know, in 1798 with the Alien and Sedition Acts. I mean, it's because all of us are broadcasters. Now they want to control all of us in the same way 1798, they punished, you know, editors of newspapers for going after presidents. So this is a very serious matter. This industry is massive, and now they're in a rush to use AI so that they're not actually making volitional decisions about this post or that post like they did in Twitter 1.0, but rather controlling through machine learning what social media is giving you. And this is a major issue. I hope that the justices side for the plaintiffs and let the injunction go ahead. And if that does happen, that would be glorious. That may be at least a symbolic bow to the existence of the First Amendment. It doesn't solve all of our problems because even enforcing that injunction raises profound questions. Like, who's going to do that? The Justice Department of the Biden administration? But at least it would set them back a few paces. But if the court does not decide in that direction, if they decide to just kick the can down the road and say, well, we're not going to enforce the injunction now, but we're going to let the case go ahead. And the Fifth Circuit, you know, it could be 5 years, 8 years before the Supreme Court visits it again. And during that time, I mean, free speech is will be at an absolute end in this country. So I'm disturbed at how little attention that this case is getting. It just isn't. I mean, you just don't see it in the headlines of the news. You don't even hear it on conservative talk radio that much. It's absolutely a turning point. But I'm also a little bit, you know, I've become a little dark and cynical over the last several years, a little bit, about why it is we're thinking and talking the things we do when we do. And I just find it fascinating that everybody's going after this TikTok thing because it's controlled by the CCP while ignoring the fact that the Justice Department, CIA, and the Department of Homeland Security has made tremendous inroads in controlling, you know, 80, 90, 95% of all the media being dished out to the American people. That's going on right now. I didn't know this was happening when it was happening. It basically started in 2016, really ramped up in 2020, but it's our current reality, and yet you hear very little talk about it. And why is that? It's because the censorship is so effective. So finally we have,
Jeffrey,
an opportunity to do something about it. And now we're, instead of talking about that, we're talking about TikTok.
Jeffrey, I don't even know that I should ask you, so I'm worried about your blood pressure and mine, but 4 years ago this week, everything changed in this country. COVID, lockdown measures began, and I personally found out more about my government and my fellow Americans than I really cared to know. Talk about it.
It was 4 years ago. Today, actually, we got the announcement of blocking of all travel from Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and all over the world into the United States. We couldn't go there. They couldn't come here. Then the very following day, we got the Stafford Act Emergency Declaration, and the Department of HHS dished out a thing called PANCAP Adapted, which basically put the National Security Council in charge of the country and fast-forwarded the vaccines, which were pre-approved and didn't even actually technically need the FDA. And we faced, you know, a grim unfolding where we were all locked in our homes and we couldn't go to church, and millions of small businesses were destroyed, and the Federal Reserve printed $5 trillion, and we're now seeing that in the form of inflation, which is still bad, as we saw this morning. So it was a turning point, not only in American civilization, but in the whole idea of Western liberty itself. And I've been spending this week celebrating this anniversary by going back and looking at the videos from today and tomorrow. The March 13th video had a press conference where Anthony Fauci steps up to microphone and says, well, the best thing you can do is wash your hands as much as possible. Well, I'm not sure what that means, because I suppose you could stand over the sink all day long washing your hands. And you could set the alarm every 15 minutes while you sleep and get up and wash your hands. I'm not sure that didn't accomplish essentially anything. And it was so gaslighting. I mean, we had our religious freedoms destroyed. We had our First Amendment freedoms. We had the whole Bill of Rights threaded. He was talking about how he's going to make us wash our hands. You know, it's been the strangest period, this unfolding of this despotism. And you remember the silence at the time. I mean, I was in a state of, you know, personal meltdown. I couldn't believe it was actually happening to this great country. And it took months before people, you know, kind of figured it out. And here we are years later, and now they tell us we should just forget about it. Well, we can't forget about it. We need a thorough accounting. We need accountability. And we need the truth. And I work on trying to figure that out every single day. You know, who knew what and when? You know, we know that they were starting to develop vaccines from January 11th. That's when the contracts with Moderna were made. And a platform technology, mRNA, all to initiate a new era of pharma profitability, where they would have platform technology and shove anything into the mRNA shots and get us all addicted to these reprogramming potions. And eventually get us on vaccine passports and that sort of thing. That's what they intended. Well, the vaccines didn't work very well, and we should actually be glad about that, because if they had done what people say they did, which is save us from COVID, which they did not, we'd be in much worse shape. But we still need truth, we need honesty, and we need thorough accounting, and people need to talk about it. I know it was a trauma like war, a trauma like, you know, mass shootings, those kinds of things. And yes, people try to forget about trauma, but if you cooperate in forgetting about it, it's going to happen again. And we're not going to be able to deal with the real problem, which is that a despotic state, a administrative state, took over this country in what I've called a digital coup d'etat. And we need truth and honesty about that, and every bit of work we possibly can to restore representative government and the Bill of Rights.
Is that why you wrote the book, Life After Lockdown?
Yeah, the book is designed to come to terms with everything that's happened since lockdowns, you know, from the substance abuse to the learning losses, the demoralization, the discrediting of public health, the inflation, you know, like everything you can possibly name, the purge of academia, of all COVID skeptics, the purges of, college students. You know, they jabbed all the college students, you know, completely unnecessarily. So there's a lot of carnage, and the book does its best to chronicle all that in great detail. And I was very honored to have an introduction by the great Rand Paul. You know, he played a very important role in all this. It was only he who stood up to Fauci. During 4 years, he was the one guy who really stood up to Fauci, and that's because he was a senator. and a doctor and wasn't intimidated by his pseudoscience and really went after him. And I just feel a personal sense of gratitude towards Rand. I don't know what we would have done if he hadn't been there.
Oh, the book is Life After Lockdown. Jeffrey, I appreciate you very much, sir. Man, that was a rough walk down memory lane, isn't it? All right. Speaking of inflation, we got numbers today. Bad. Let's talk to Carol Roth about what all this stuff means. Where are we going? What's in store for us this year? Before we do that, let's do this. You know Byrna, B-Y-R-N-A? You know SWAT teams around the country use Byrna products? Listen, I carry a weapon. You know that. I carry it concealed. I want a non-lethal option. Everybody, whether you carry a weapon or not, should be carrying a non-lethal option. The Byrna pistol launcher shoots these balls, these pepper balls or tear gas balls or these kinetic rounds, just hard plastic rounds. Again, non-lethal. You can't skid a read on the bad guy, maybe shoot the ground in front of him, incapacitate him for up to 40 minutes. Ladies, you're out jogging, bring your Byrna pistol. Go to Byrna and see all the stuff they have. My entire family, not only do we have these, we practice with them together in the backyard because they're stupid fun to practice with. Go, 10% off. Byrna.com/Jesse. Everyone needs one. We'll be back.
Wages keep going up. Inflation keeps coming down. Inflation has dropped from 9% to 3%, the lowest in the world, and tending lower.
Man, that's great news. Woo! Here I was worried about the value of the dollar. Turns out we're good to go. I don't even know why we're having Carol on. Hey, Mr. Producer, do we have time to hang up on Carol? Joining me now, Carol Roth, author of the book You Will Own Nothing. And look, she's just the best-selling author now, period. Hey, Carol, why are you even here? Inflation's fine.
I'm just here because I like hanging out with you, Jesse. And finally, I want to deliver some good news to people. You know, you always have me on here delivering the bad news about the economy. But Joe Biden has assured us that things are going really, really well. And if you look at his new budget, he is lowering costs for the American people and giving them some breathing room. So I am sure that you're very happy to hear that. I know that your viewers are very happy to hear that. And I'm thrilled to just be able to spread a little bit of sunshine.
Yes, just thank you for that sunshine, Carol. Okay, Carol, well, 3.2% doesn't sound good. You have educated us many times that they're going for 2%. So can you explain what we found out today?
So we never want to hang our hats, so to speak, on any one piece of data, especially since the data is complete garbage and completely downplays how much inflation people are really dealing with. But, you know, everybody in the Biden administration and all the mouthpieces said, oh, we're just going to, yeah, well, they told us we weren't going to have any inflation, but now it was going to go back to that normal point that the Fed is targeting 2%. And we were on our way to this soft landing of the economy where inflation comes down and the economy is still strong. And oh, we've hit a little bit of glitch, a little bit of turbulence, so to speak, on that soft landing. We can't quite land yet because inflation is now ticking in the other direction slightly. And people get very caught up in this sort of month-to-month data, but it is really obscuring the fact that we have this underlying fiscal crisis that really is going to be the impetus for long-term inflation, for inflation that sticks with you, that eats up your purchasing power over the long term. So while we spend a lot of time and energy going, well, is 3.2 good? Or maybe it's come down, you know, from that 9%. The reality is people are losing purchasing power still. It is compounding. People's personal balance sheets are getting killed. And there's no sort of hope in sight because the fiscal foundation of the U.S., and as we saw from President Biden's budget, there's no sort of plan to change that, is in complete disarray. And I think that is the piece of the messaging that is not getting enough airtime. So I'm glad that you give me that airtime to share that, even though, unfortunately, that's not happy news.
No, it's not happy news. And I'm glad you brought up the budget. Of course, Joe Biden proposed a budget. No, it's not going to pass. All presidents do this now. Since we live under a perpetual state of continuing resolution, which is illegal, I should point out, well, all we get is these fantasy budgets. But I did find it was interesting, Carol, that there were $5.5 trillion in new taxes there. Okay, so Joe Biden being a dirty, tax-loving commie is not surprising, but I did think that maybe this is a preview of the future once this debt crisis comes. Is that what they're going to do to us, Carol, is just come pillage us tax-wise when the crisis gets here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely is a preview of what's ahead, and it's something that I talk about extensively in You Will Own Nothing. And the way that they are trying to sell it into the American public is very nefarious. They want to say this is stuff we're only going to go after the billionaires, or we're only going to go after the millionaires. But some of the things that they're proposing are really big shifts. Things like trying to get people confused between wealth and income. On one of their quote unquote fact sheets, I love the fact that it's called a fact sheet when it's filled with lies, but they talked about the fact that billionaires only pay an average tax rate of 8%. Now, I'm thinking to myself, Jesse, well, that sounds really sweet. How do I get in on this 8% rate? Because I've never heard of such a thing. And of course, it's a giant lie. There is no 8% rate. What they've done is they've taken the wealth of billionaires at a point in time, including unrealized stock gains. And they said, well, if we liquidated every single piece of it today, this is about how much they're paying of what they're worth. And they want to get people to buy into that as, well, that's okay. It's okay if we go after the wealth of the billionaires, not realizing that you're then conceding property rights, that you're conceding the ability for them to do the same thing to you. And this is the mechanism that they're going to steal your wealth, whether it be through your assets, whether it be through inheritances in the future. They're laying this out for you, and they're trying to get the American public to buy into it. And it's not for your benefit. It's so that they continue to grow government power at your expense, quite literally.
Jerome Powell, not exactly a huge fan, but he did say something that I obviously agree with when he talked about our unsustainable fiscal path. There he was.
How do you assess the national debt?
We mostly try very hard not to comment on fiscal policy and instruct Congress on how to do their job when actually they have oversight over us.
But is the national debt a danger to the economy, in your view?
In the long run, the U.S. is on an unsustainable fiscal path. The U.S. federal government's on an unsustainable fiscal path. And that just means that the debt is growing faster than the economy.
I have the sense this worries you very much.
Over the long run, of course it does.
Carol, what's that mean? Over the long run. Over the long run. Over the long run. That sounds like a lot of Janet Yellen speak of, I think things will probably get good, maybe, hopefully. What does that mean?
Yeah, I feel like that's the correlation to inflation is transitory, is that we're concerned that this is unsustainable in the long run. Listen, pretty much everybody and their brother with a brain cell has said this is unsustainable. We saw the rating agencies downgrade the U.S. debt because it's unsustainable. We've had the Congressional Budget Office say this. We had the IMF say this. We've had the Treasury say it. We have had Jerome Powell, you just heard him say it. You've had Jamie Dimon say it. You've had Nassim Taleb say it. I mean, pretty much everybody knows this is the reality. And unfortunately, they're not doing anything about it. This idea that they're going to continue to add these massive deficits instead of trying to have a balanced budget or bring down the debt, or frankly, do anything that increases productivity and grows the economy, because that's another potential way out of this. It's just a joke. And this idea of the long run for Jerome Powell is perhaps when he's no longer Fed chair, which I'm guessing is, you know, something he's looking to get out of sooner rather than later. So the long run is here today. It is not sustainable today. We have debt levels that if we didn't have the world's reserve currency, we would be in an emerging market type of wealth crisis. We do have the world's reserve currency for now, although that's shifting as well. But this cannot go on forever, and we are just getting dangerously close to the point of no return. And unfortunately, there's just nobody with the balls to stand up and say so and do something about it.
How do you get to be Federal Reserve Chair, Carol? I want to be Federal Reserve Chair. Do you have to go to college? I don't have a degree or anything.
I think you have to be somebody who's willing to suck up to whatever the political establishment and the elites say. So I think you're ruled out for that, Jesse. But it, you know, it's different. They've had academics in the past. You know, Jerome Powell is the first person who kind of came from industry. You know, he was in private equity and within the banking circles before the wonderful insights of Janet Yellen and obviously Ben Bernanke before. Yeah. So you have to be well connected and well liked with the elite. So unfortunately, you are not eligible. So I'm sure we'll get somebody equally as fabulous when Jerome Powell is no longer there.
Dang it. I thought that one was going to be mine. Carol, thank you. All right. It's time for Lighten the Mood. You ready for that? We need one tonight. Hang on. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And there's nothing that lightens my mood more than kids' sports. Specifically, it's when kids are doing their sports wrong, because that's hilarious. Anyway, here's a kid playing t-ball. Not how I remember T-ball at all. All right, let's see them.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.